We have talked about it endlessly over the last decade or so, and we've accomplished close to zip.
We know enough about our climate problem to know that it's serious and that we need to get started right away.
What we're seeing right now is a clear loading of the weather dice.
Thursday afternoon, and Paul Huttner's back with this week's Climate Cast. Hi, Paul.
Hey, Tom.
I want to hear a little more about this event. You and I have talked a bit about it. It's an event you organized that featured some of Minnesota's top climate experts. What were you up to?
Yeah, that's right, Tom. I wanted to talk about some of the real, observable, practical effects of climate change in our region. So earlier this month, I sat down with U of M forest ecologist Lee Fralick and UMD Lake Superior specialist Jay Austin up at the North House Folk School in Grand Marais. This week on Climate Cast, we hear some of the highlights of that conversation about how climate change is impacting our forests and lakes.
I'm going to talk about climate change in Minnesota's forests. And as Paul just said, it's been warming quite rapidly, and I'll show you some responses that are already occurring to the warming that's already happened. Trees are not Republicans or Democrats. Trees don't lie. And trees are probably the best integrator of climate change that there is. Maybe Lake Superior's better. We'll find out in a few minutes. These are the ranges of some of the trees we have. Did you know Minnesota is the edgiest state in the union? Almost every species of tree in this state has the edge of its range here, and that means we are way more sensitive to climate change in terms of our forest than other places. So things like red oak and red maple and sugar maple have their northern range limit here. And boreal species like fir, spruce, and birch have their southern range limits in Minnesota. So we either have northern or southern range limits and western range limits of virtually every species. So we're going to see a much bigger change in our forest than most other places in the world. In the boundary waters, we found red maple on all 2,000 of our plots in the seedling layer. So, and that's a response to the warming that's already occurred. So red maple seedlings are everywhere in the boundary waters. And that's a lot different from what Bud Heinzelman found in his work that he did in the 1960s and 70s, where red maple only occurred in 10 or 20% of the boundary waters. Another thing might happen, that is the prairie forest border might move through and knock out all the trees. So the boundary waters would be right at the edge of the prairie forest border. And maybe the eastern boundary waters would still hang on to some forest. Of course, if we follow the Paris Agreement, it might not warm up that much, and temperate trees will still move in, but we'll hang on to a lot more forest than if we follow the business-as-usual scenario for carbon dioxide emissions. You've all seen the dead birch trees on the North Shore. That was the result of having several summers in a row with a period of severe drought sometime during the summer, during the first decade of the millennium. In addition to that, there are insects. This is mountain pine beetle. It's native to North America, but not to eastern North America. And it's killed about 40 million acres of forest in western Canada and western United States. And it is killed by temperatures of minus 40 in the winter. And it's gotten over the Rocky Mountains now, and in fact, it's into jackpine in northern Saskatchewan. With the warming of the winters in the southern margin of the boreal forest, it's spreading eastwards. And all it needs is a run of several warm winters where it doesn't get down to minus 40 to come to Minnesota. And we had another PhD student who's already determined with some trials, feeding trials for the bug, that it likes all three of our pine species, red, white, and jack. So if global warming did nothing other than make it so that it didn't get down to minus 40 in January in the future and nothing else in the climate changed, it could still destroy the forests in northern Minnesota. So where are we going in the future? Well, either we're going to go here and it's going to warm up a couple degrees, or we're going to go up there and it's going to warm up 10 or 12 degrees. And that makes the difference between having forest in the boundary waters, it'll be mixed temperate and boreal, but still be forest, versus the boundary waters being an oak savanna. And that's all I have to say for now.
My name is Jay Austin, and it's a real honor to have an opportunity to speak here at the North House School. I appreciate the invitation from the school and from Paul. Why are small changes in climate leading to large changes in ice cover? And if if Paul had said, hey, Jay, I want you to come speak, but you're only allowed to bring one slide, this would be it right here. These are the things that are worth noting. There's a tremendous amount of variability from year to year. Here's 2014 up here. 2 years earlier, in the opposite corner, 2012. And so the warmest and the coldest, the iciest and the least icy years occurred within 2 years of each other. For somebody studying ice, this is gravy. This is great stuff because there's this enormous amount of variability in the system that allows us to study the differences between these sorts of years. And what it tells us is that winter air temperature is the whole story when it comes to ice formation on the lake. It doesn't matter what happened the previous summer. If you had a really warm summer, the lake doesn't care. You had a really cool summer, the lake doesn't care. The lake just cares, or the ice that forms on the lake is largely a function of that winter air temperature. And as has been mentioned here, it's winters that do seem to be warming the most rapidly in upper Minnesota. The difference between one of these no ice years and one of these high ice years is 1 to 2 degrees Celsius. Okay? And so I think that one of the problems we run into when we try to communicate climate change to a lay audience, even an educated lay audience, is that these changes in temperature we talk about sound really small. It's going to be a degree, 2 degrees, 3 degrees warmer by the end of the century. Well, it was 10 degrees colder this morning, and it's going to be 20 degrees warmer tomorrow. So why should I care about that 1 or 2 degrees? This right here is why you should care about that 1 or 2 degrees. 2009 is a great example here. People are ice fishing off of Brighton Beach in Duluth. It's when there are tourists going down to Ashland to go to the ice caves. It's when the shipping season is delayed because of the ice, or ambitious shippers get their boats stuck in Whitefish Bay because they thought they were going to get through and they didn't, and they sustain tremendous amounts of damage to their boats. We have these giant systems where ice and water temperature dramatically affect the ecosystems of the lake, but they also have significant knock-on effects to recreation, to commerce, and really, ice on these lakes is part of what defines them. It's part of the culture up here is to have ice forming on these lakes. So thank you very much.
Tom, that event at the North House Folk School also included some really great questions and insights from the audience in Grand Marais. So next week on ClimateCast, we'll hear some of what the audience had to say about Minnesota's changing environment.
All right, Paul Huttner, thank you. Interesting as always.
Thanks, Tom.
ClimateCast with Paul Huttner. You hear it Thursdays at this time.